some of your reaction coming in this morning. George in Fermanagh. Morning, George.
Good morning.
Go ahead, George.
I'd just like to ask if Michael Maguire has so-called evidence. Has he worked with EPP about it?
So, yes, he did go to the DPP.
Are they going to have a case or not?
Well, he did go to the DPP.
It should be the law of the land that says whether guilty of anything or not, not Michael Maguire.
Well, so let me finish the point and explain to you, George, what happened. So Michael Maguire did go to the DPP and had a conversation with them. But Michael Maguire has already said yesterday publicly that there is a high threshold for a criminal prosecution. You need specific evidence. You need specific names. You need credible evidence that is going to stand up in court.
Then his evidence is not credible, is he saying?
There's a difference between evidence being credible and evidence being enough to get a criminal prosecution.
He hasn't enough evidence, though. Full stop.
Well, what he would argue, George, is that he has reached his conclusion based on the evidence that he has been able to find. It's not for him to prosecute people.
In court. He has no evidence, or not enough evidence, so they are innocent. Any member of the RUC or anything else. And I would just also like to ask, many...
Have you read the report?
...orders of RUC officers has Michael Maguire investigated by the IRA.
Well, Michael Maguire is the police ombudsman. So he investigates the police, George.
He has investigated nothing. Only what the RUC is supposed to have done in security forces.
Have you read the report?
No. And I've no intention of ever. Because I know before I start, it'll be one-sided.
Chris Ryder listening to this morning. Chris, good morning to you.
Morning.
Good morning. What's your reaction here?
Well, I think the first thing to remember is that, above all, this is a human tragedy for the victims and survivors, not only in Loughlin Island, but right across the years of conflict, and when these reports come out, it renews the trauma for many people. They remember their own difficulties, and one wonders how they cope with this being dredged up after such a long period of time.
What does it say, Chris, about what the British government were prepared, how low the British government, were the state were prepared to go?
Well, you know, there's a very basic dilemma here. I'm not here to act as an apologist for them, but, you know, the special branch was a force within a force. It was charged with getting intelligence to try and prevent and detect crime. And they failed in that duty. They just managed to gather information and then hold on to it for no other reason than they had information. It wasn't disseminated to investigating officers. In many cases, attacks were allowed to go ahead, or arms were allowed to be smuggled, or things of that sort, because they didn't want to compromise their informers. They believed that it was more important to keep the informer in there. Now, there's a moral point there. The government, as Mr. Maguire points out in his report, we were asked for guidance, but the thing was always shuffled around, and the police were left to take those decisions themselves. It's difficult. It's a very important dilemma. The trouble is that in many cases, the way that the information wasn't used led to deaths, led to assaults, led to murders. And we've seen in this case how this huge importation of arms, a bank robbery to finance the package, was all known about by the authorities. But there was only a limited attempt to intervene, and the whole saga resulted in the deaths at Loughlin Island and indeed 70 other murders. Now, that's not a proud record, and the people who were responsible for allowing that to go ahead really have an awful lot to answer to society and the law for. But on the other hand, you mustn't forget that there were very many honest and rigorously professional detectives who tried their best with the information they had to bring about the identity, or to discover the identity of these terrorists, these murderers, and to bring them to justice. That didn't happen in far too many cases. You know, too many of our troubles killings are actually unsolved.
Stephen's in Derry. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm just sitting here thinking, and I'm just going off, thinking off the top of my head. I'm just writing out. You have the Monaghan bombings in Dublin. You have the King's Mill, who they found evidence the last moment. You have the Miami Show ban. You have McGurk's Bar. You have the Shankill bombing. You have the Omagh bombing. You have Scapatigi coming up today. You have Donaldson, plus Loughran Island that came yesterday, plus the Birmingham bombings. How dirty and how murky is the special branch hands on all these incidents? And that's, I'm not even talking about the Glen Arm gang. They've never been investigated. And you have the, like a chief counsel, profound sorrow and regret to the families coming on, and he hasn't done one thing about it. And you have the Shinners and the SDLP sitting on the policing board, drinking coffee and having tea with them, where they should be saying, no, we're not sitting on this board any longer until you get your own house in order. There's a lot of things has gone wrong down the line, and these things have to be addressed because we have no future.
Well, Sinn Féin and Sinn Féin would say that that they're in there representing the people who vote for them.
Well, they haven't represented the people.
And the policing has changed fundamentally. That's what they would say, wouldn't they?
Stephen, they're not representing the people that voted for them. If they were truly representing the people that voted for them, they wouldn't be sitting on that board until the police and the special branch of the past got their house in order.
But what does that mean, getting their house in order? You think about the past. You think about left unresolved over the past, the mess over dealing with the past that our country is still in.
Right. If you go down that road then, Stephen.
It's all being done on a case-by-case piecemeal. But listen, it's all being done on a case-by-case piecemeal basis, isn't it?
Well, to get the people, well, if that's the case then, to get the PSNI on board, they should investigate their own first. Then people can rule on behind them. They go out and hunt for the Boston Pippers. They prosecute pensioners and the likes and people. That's and you've still got them protecting their own. It's an absolute disgrace. And by the way, I never ever have faith in the PSNI as long as they remain what they are. They're a cover up for past atrocities that they haven't even begun to address.
Well, the RUC put many loyalists behind bars.
Most of them were just foot soldiers. They didn't put the main men. They didn't put the murderers like the Glen Arm. Many Glen Arm gangs won, I think. And after they were found, after he was convicted of holding arms, and they still went back to his farm and held arms after it. You have to address the past. They hope for a better future for everybody.
But how do you address the past?
There
are two extremes. There are two extremes when it comes to dealing with the past, aren't there? Open it up totally. Investigate absolutely everything. Inquests, inquiries, prosecutions, whatever falls out. And then the other option is all of this is just scratching at the sores. What you do, the other option is, if you can't get justice, you get the truth.
Well, we'll never have the truth if the police is left to investigate themselves. It has an international independent body and everything left, and for that international independent body to investigate police files from 40 years ago.
You talk about the police, and rightly so. Of course, you're entitled to do that. But do you think that you're ever going to get the truth out of the paramilitaries? You're going to get the truth out of the IRA and the loyalist paramilitaries.
But they're a lawful police force. Even if you never got the truth out of paramilitaries, they're a lawful police force. They're there, they uphold the law. The paramilitaries and everybody else was fighting because of what happened. They're there, they hold up the law.
What you're wanting to talk about today, though, so far, is Loughran Island. Lots of you wanting to talk about this, so let's give you a platform to do so. Thomas, morning, Thomas.
Hi, Stephen, can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, Thomas.
All right. I remember Loughran Island when I was 11 years old, and I lived just out in a town just outside Loughran Island. Now, I remember it as a child watching Ireland play in a World Cup, because that's why I remember it so well. And we were playing it. We were playing Italy. And there was a certain footballer that scored a goal. And I remember, like, just the elation of it. Like, just, like, that not only our team was in America, but we had scored this goal and beaten, you know, like, the world champion, or we were beating the world champions. But I remember kind of, like the Loch Nine Island massacre happened. And I just remember, as a child, I was born not before the Troubles happened and not after the Goody Friday Agreement, so I was sort of born, like, slight slap bang in the middle of it. Well, it was the first time, like, the Troubles had ever sort of knocked on our door, you know, as a community in a way. And I just remember, like, as a child, it was like black tar sticking in your mind, the force of it, the weight of the evil. And it always drove me kind of near mad. You know, in terms of the Troubles, the kind of, like, what all this is about, what all this is happening. Because you think, when you're a child growing up inside the Troubles or whatever, you think, like, this, like, the whole universe is like this. You have no concept of it whatsoever, that there's anything outside it. But it near drove me insane. It near drove me into distraction why all this was happening. And see, with regards, see, when that Loch Nine Island massacre happened, I was just a child when it happened. Almost as soon as that massacre happened, there was a rumour flying around everywhere that the police were involved. Now, nobody really believed it, I don't think, in ours, but the rumour was so fierce and so ferocious, you thought to yourself, well, it wouldn't surprise me if it did happen. But see, when that came out last night, yesterday, there, just like, I was like a click in the mind going, so it was true all along. And it makes you think, in terms of what actually happened and what is, like, the truth about the Troubles. Because as a child, I used to always ask out, you know, like, as you do, like, and I'd always get the same answer back again and again and again. It's about Catholics and Protestants. It's about Catholics and Protestants. See, like, when things like that happen, and the effect it had me as a child, because I remember saying to myself as a child, I want to join the IRA. Just when that happened, I was like a click in my mind, even though I was only 11. With all my heart, I wanted to join and you know, take my part to whatever X, Y, and Z. But the thing is, like, it was never about Catholics or Protestants. It was about, the truth about the Troubles is what? The Empire Strikes Back. That's the truth there. It was never a religious conflict. It was a colonial conflict. And everything that happened in Troubles from the very beginning to the very end, it's only about one thing, and people should know this, especially the Good Friday generation, generation or whatever. It's just about the legacy the British have left on our island. That's all it is.
We can't blame everything, though, on the British, Thomas, can we?
Stephen,
it's too simplistic, isn't it? And no, look, what this report has shown, Thomas,
that it was that it was a colonial conflict, and that was just that murder, those stack of murders were just a dimension of that colonial conflict. It's just about the establishment of a dynamic. And see, here's the thing. See, in terms, you say it's an oversimplification. It's not, Stephen, because what they did actually worked. What they did actually worked. There's a British brigadier by the name of Kitson. Now, I always talk to my old man about this and X, Y, and Z, and we were discussing this over, and he said to me that you should read this book by this man, Kitson. And I had a wee goose's gander on it, but it's just about the idea of actually collapsing the will of a people by deliberately targeting civilians. That's what it comes down to. And the British are up their necks in this, they're up their eyeballs, and this is what all this is about. This is kind of, we were attacked by Britain. This is what it comes down to. And if you think to yourself, do you know, there's another thing about this. Do you know the true reason why those killings happened? This is just my theory. You know, the reason they were killed, it was the poison our World Cup experience, because there was a big hoo-ha about Ireland having to play Northern Ireland in the 1994, and we had to get a draw, and we did. And it was World War III kicked over because we'd made it through. But they did that. That's just the spite and that poison and the malice, the unfathomable malice in the hearts of the British people towards us. That's what it is. They did that just to poison our World Cup experience. That's why they died.
And what was the attitude of the paramilitaries the other way?
The stickies.
The what?
The provos.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
What's their attitude?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
What I'm trying to say is there was hate on both sides. That's what I'm trying to say.
Let me ask you this here, Stephen. Did the Provos ever stoop as low as Loch Nine Island? Ever?
What about Kingsmills?
Well, I'd never agree with Kingsmill, ever. but it was a one-off. This here was actually deliberate and consistent policy. It was a British. It was a policy of the British state.
Isn't part of the problem though that there could be examples traded all day from one side to the other, from loyalist paramilitaries to the likes of the IRA to the likes of the British state.
Well, let me ask you this here, Stephen. Do you ever see in so-called Catholic areas, and when you say Catholic, you really mean Irish, do you ever see the Da Vinci Code
wrapped everywhere, over, you know, painted in child's faces or signposts on walls and everything else?
Listen, we've just lost you. I think you came away from the phone. If I look at the phones, they're going mad on this today. 0330 80 55 55. William and Armagh. Morning, William.
Hello, Stephen. How you doing?
Go ahead.
I don't think we need any more inquiries to accept the fact that there was collusion on all sides throughout the troubles in Northern Ireland. Probably was it necessary, or they thought it was necessary means to an end. But what I often wonder about is, whenever the Widgery report came out about the Bloody Sunday killings, it said that the state was clean. And then we get the second report, which dismissed the first Widgery report. And then it's where I'm really confused. Whenever the first Ombudsman report came out, the Lochan Island killings, it seemed to clear the police too of sort of serious doings in this thing. I often wonder, is there someone else in the establishment directing these people who are involved in these inquiries to tell them that this is the outcome we want, this is the outcome the state
no,
wants?
No, and there is absolutely no suggestion of that whatsoever. John in the Shankill. Morning, John.
Hello. How's it going, Stephen?
Go ahead, John.
I just heard that or, you know, for lack of a better term, Egypt on the radio, or maybe phone in there, but he tried to say that this was only a one-off. The IRA did there. You know, as you now heard of Shankill bombing, Le Mans and all these places. Many children were killed in bombs. How's one murder better than another? You know, the country will never move forward really. It's like both sides were as bad as each other. But Egypt's on the radio coming on trying to justify and say that
He wasn't justifying anything. He was not justifying it.
What's that, Steve?
He was not justifying it.
Well, he was.
So why don't we? He was not justifying it. Why don't we look, John, for your opinion as to what should happen next? How do you deal with the past in this country, John?
Nobody has a clue. If you knew how to do that, you'd be a rich man, wouldn't you? You know what it is. Know it is for sure. See all this festering and all these non-stop investigations and stuff. You know, it's just pulling up over old sores, isn't it, really? It's raking everything up again.
Well, you say that. It's raking up, it's pulling old sores, it's doing that. But then put yourself in the shoes of Emma Rogan this morning. She was 8 years of age when she lost her father. And now she reads yesterday. She had to wait all of those years. And 22 years after her father is killed, she finally gets an official report confirming collusion, confirming the British state's involvement in the cover-up of her father's murder.
No doubt, Steve, no doubt. No doubt if it's in black and white. Sure it happened, if it did happen. But ask yourself this one question. As bad as that may be, and, you know, it's terrible for the families, young people involved, whatever, it's not, you know what I mean, it was a dirty war, that's what the Brits said, didn't it? But ask yourself one question. When are the Protestant people of Ulster going to get an apology from the Irish state? Just once. When's it going to happen? When are we going to get a report coming out that says, what about the collusion with the IRA and the deaths of the parts and the cover-ups that the Irish government played in the deaths of Protestant British citizens? When's that going to happen? It's never happened. You know what I mean? So as bad as this is, this collusion and whatever, we've heard of it before. We've heard Tony Blair apologise, and we've heard David Cameron apologising to the nationalist people. Well, when are we going to get an apology from Bertie Ahern or Albert Reynolds or any of these Taoiseachs in the Irish state? When's that for happening?
We're into the whataboutery now, John, aren't we?
Well, listen, you asked me a question about, you know, the collusion on behalf of the one side, but we've already had all these reports. When are we going to get an apology for the Protestant people that died? It's never happened. Why is that?
John, thank you. Joe in Belfast. Morning, Joe.
Well, Stephen, I think they're getting off the mark. You know, they started off with Loch and Ayle, and the ads came into the same old stories again. If you stick with the Loch and Ayle report and bring it back to Patton, Patton was the main man on this new police force. And in his report, he finalised his report with a very important statement. The PSNI and any police force in Northern Ireland cannot move forward without the disbandment of special branch. Patton criticised them then as a force within a force. The CID within the IEC couldn't move on murders like Loch and Ayle, like Patton Nugan, because special branch told them to pull out and stay it. Now, the only way you're going to move forward here on all these issues, King's Mill, Loch and Ayle, all these issues, is that you're going to have to bring convictions against the people who covered these murders and colluded.
Okay.
Once you bring, Stephen, one of these guys out of special branch, like they're going to do in England over Hillsborough, they're going to bring people to book for that over in England, and they will.
Okay, we've got to leave it there. We've got to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you.